In summary, real quickly, I'll give you the conclusion of my comments this morning. It's a time for caution. First of all, it's a time of confusion. If you look at the most recent Federal Reserve report from Chicago, it suggests land values are down 3%. If you look at the St. Louis Federal Reserve, they say quality land is up 1%. If you look at the Kansas City, they say they're steady. So how are we supposed to really know what is in fact happening? And it's not black or white by any dimension. We are in a stage of confusion, in my biased opinion. Today with you, I'm going to talk a little bit about the land market. I'm going to talk about my last two visits with you here at the Beef House. Hopefully we'll have a number of questions. But first of all, if you look at our, or if you read our most recent newsletter, and Katie Prisbilski up here at the front has a quantity of them or would welcome the opportunity of signing you up for them, I point out in that newsletter that it's a time for some people to be buyers, it's a time for some people to be sellers. And again, it depends upon your individual circumstances, to say the least. But the factors affecting the current land market, there's a significant number of them we're going to cover this morning. First and foremost, commodity prices. Again, we had a good overview earlier this morning, and I'm looking very forward to the comments later today regarding commodity prices. But in today's marketplace, the number one driver, one of the number one drivers, is the location of the property. There's a tremendous variance from not county to county, but township to township. If you look at Champaign, Illinois, for the same soils, the same 160 acres, will bring a $3,000 differential in price depending upon where it's located within the county, and that's true throughout the Midwest. And last, and Todd stole a little bit of my thunder on this, but interest rates. And we are in an environment where none of us in this room have ever lived in an interest rate environment like we are currently in. If you go back to my visit with you 2 years ago, again, similar overlying message, it's a time for caution. The same token, I believe, through a question, if I remember right, somebody forced me to predict what would happen within the next year. I finally said, in my opinion, land values would be up 6 to 8%. It was a very, very poor prediction, very poor prediction. And then in 2013, land values were up closer to 20% in most geographic areas. Last year when I was with you, I stated that we were in a two-tiered market, in my opinion, as we are to a degree today. I pointed out that it was not a bubble, and I still believe that today, that we are not in a bubble like we were in the early 1980s, that the number one driver is commodity prices, interest rates. We talked extensively a year ago about California water. That continues to be an interesting question because the circumstances have simply gotten worse. And again, indirectly, that still has an impact on all U.S. commodity prices. Again, a year ago, I stated it was a time for caution, but I've also pointed out, as I believe today, the long-term outlook for farmland is still very, very bright. Okay, today, let's back up for a second and think about farmland in the category of A, B, C, and a few D soils. But let's think of A soils, B soils, and C soils. Few D soils in southern Illinois, southern Indiana that were farmed, most of that's fortunately returned to CRP acres. But if you look at A-plus soils, A soils, to the greatest extent, I believe today, they're higher than they were a year ago. They're being treated almost as like a treasury-type asset where people will accept a very, very low rate of return on those super, super high-quality A-plus and A soils. By the same token, the A-minus soils, the B soils, the C soils are, in fact, lower. Iowa State recently came out with a survey saying that in 2014 that land values were down 9%. That, to me, is a little bit of an overgeneralization, if you will, on the basis that, yes, on average they're down 9%, but there have been many sales, not only in the state of Iowa, but throughout the Midwest, on A and A-plus soils that are higher than they were a year ago. Yes, the B soils are lower, the C soils are significantly lower, and the D soils are even more significantly lower. Again, you can say down 9%, but you need to categorize that and know exactly what, in fact, you're talking about, if you will. The characteristics, as I've already touched on, the number one drivers, commodity prices, and I hope to leave here today with a lot more information than I arrived with. And again, the panel this morning was very, very informative, to say the least, but I'm looking for more information, needless to say. Commodity prices, though, if you go back 2 years and look at the corn price, and Greg did a good job of talking about changes in a year, but if you go back 2 years, the corn price today is 54% lower than it was 2 years ago. And that is a major negative impact on anyone involved in agriculture relevant to their cash flow, if you will. Again, the next characteristic, which I've touched on, is location. Where is that property that you're going to market located or you're going to sell? And who are the neighbors, quite frankly, to put it very, very bluntly? Interest rates. Interest rates continue to be an absolutely almost unbelievable sort of circumstance. Todd touched on, 0.15 being an attractive interest rate back in 1980. If somebody said we would one day have 0.15 interest rates, probably half of us in this room or half of us that were alive at that crossroad in 1980 would, in fact, have simply passed out with the idea of having those types of interest rates. By the same token, globally, and I really believe you need to pay attention globally to the interest rates around the world, because there's a lot more steady set of circumstances here in the United States than there are in many, many countries. If you look at Switzerland for a second, the one-year government has a minus rate of return. The 10-year government in Switzerland has a minus rate of return. In Germany, the one-year and the five-year governments have minus rates of return. In France, the short-term has a minus return. Denmark, even Portugal, has a minus rate of return. Now, let's put that into context. Anyone here in this room takes $100,000, puts it into 10-year Swiss franc government bonds, you'll get no check annually, number one. And number two, 10 years from now, you'll get less money back than you put into that instrument. Again, a very, very unusual set of circumstances from an interest rate point of view. My next point regarding interest rates, and it probably only affects one person in this room, and that would possibly be Paul Cooley, but anyone who has large amounts of money on deposit with the Bank of New York, if you have $25 million or more on deposit with the Bank of New York today, they charge you 12.5 basis points for holding your money. An unbelievable set of circumstances, in my biased opinion. J.P. Morgan announced on Thursday or Friday of this past week that they were going to try to run off not hundreds of millions, but billions of dollars of deposits, because they have nothing to do with the money. They have excess money, and they want it to leave the bank. Again, a very, very unusual set of circumstance, to say the least. The other factor that you need to focus on is the volume of land sales that we're having throughout the Midwest today. I've been in this business 39 years as of July 1, and there's never been less land for sale in that 39-year career than there is today. A dramatically lower quantity of ground that potentially will trade hands. You ask yourself why. In my opinion, the why is very, very, very simple. What does a seller, particularly that retired person in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, what does that retired person do with that capital today? And as a result, there's a tremendous reluctance to sell. Why do you want to go to Todd's bank and put it on deposit for 0.15% for 15 months or 12 months, whatever he referred to, when in fact that farm will return, at least 1.5%, 2%, 2.5%, maybe 3%, a little more than 3% in some particular cases. Again, the alternative investments are a tragic set of circumstances today. And that brings me to my fifth point that I think are driving land values, that being a lack of alternative investments. We've touched on government bonds. Again, the 10-year U.S. government has recently rallied to back over 2% finally. Again, that return is pale in comparison to what a good Illinois or Indiana farm will in fact return for you. The stock market, again, after being through 2008, 2009, many of us in this room or many of us who own farmland are going to be highly reluctant to take any significant amount of capital and plow it back into the stock market, despite the fact we've had obviously some very attractive returns in the last two or 3 years within the stock market. Institutional investors. I'd be amiss if I didn't touch on institutional investors, because Previously, that was a significant part of my life, if you will. But the same token, if you look at the U.S. pension industry, the U.S. hedge fund industry, the U.S. publicly traded land funds, which there now are a number of, when in fact there was practically none of them 3 years ago. If you look at these funds, they are having a tragic time placing the large amounts of capital that they have been able to raise to invest within U.S. farmland. Again, a very difficult set of circumstances because they cannot accept a 2.5% rate of return, and therefore have essentially considered themselves locked out of the marketplace, if you will. Other items that I think are worth looking at as we think about land values today are real interest rates. Now, most of us don't stop and think about, and this is an oversimplification of a definition, but real interest rates are an interest rate, let's say you're receiving 2% and inflation's 1%, your real rate of return is 1%. And again, the real interest rate factor is something that we all need to think of and be prepared to live with on a go-forward basis. The other subject I want to touch on you, and this is more of a caution light or a warning light, if you will, for those of us who do, in fact, own a significant investment or have a significant investment in farmland. We are surrounded by a number of states who literally have lost their way relevant to property taxes. And we need to not allow this to happen in Illinois and Indiana. If you look at Ohio for a second, the state of Ohio a number of years ago worked with the Farm Bureau in coming up with a formula to calculate property taxes where, in fact, they reevaluate those property taxes every 3 years. A farm management firm in Champaign the other day was sharing with me that one of their very, very high-quality Ohio farms in 2015, the property taxes jumped from $34 per acre in 2014 to $75 an acre in 2015. We are currently doing a large 1031 tax-deferred exchange on an approximate 2,000-acre farm at North Fork, Nebraska, where, in fact, despite the fact the owner's a farmer, he just wants to leave the state. On that 2,000 acres in Norfolk, Nebraska, it's $8,000 land, to put it into perspective. The property taxes range from $72 to $75 an acre. We are selling on Thursday of this week, we're auctioning Thursday of this week, 240 acres in a very high-quality land in southern Minnesota. The property taxes, because Minnesota has an absurd little rule relevant to homestead. You don't have to actually live on the farm to homestead it if you're a Minnesota farmer. The current property taxes are, in fact, $22 an acre. I've presented this farm to several different investors who would like to own the farm, but if an out-of-state buyer buys this farm that we'll be selling Thursday in Minnesota, the property taxes will jump from $22 an acre to $37 an acre. Again, dramatic changes in these states literally surround us here in Illinois and Indiana and Iowa for that matter. But again, I hope that doesn't occur within the state of Illinois and Indiana, which the bulk of us own land within, if you will. Those are dramatic changes, but we live in an environment, in my opinion, that once a government, whether it's a county government, a state government, or particularly the federal government, once they have a certain degree of funding, to take that away from them is nearly impossible, as they will figure out how to spend the money one way or another. The other subject I touched on a year ago with you were the use of drones within agriculture. A year ago, we were facing a very devastating set of circumstances, in my opinion, where, in fact, the FAA was trying to put us involved in agriculture and many others, I might add, but particularly those of us involved in agriculture, they were trying to put us out of business relevant to our ability to use a drone to analyze a property from a visual point of view, to analyze a crop, to analyze from a tile drainage point of view with infrared photography. I'm very pleased to report to you and very surprised to report to you that an effort led by the federal House representative who covers Champaign, Rodney Davis, took this on very, very personally for the sake of agriculture, and finally, to my amazement, a month ago, has a pending rule change with FAA, which is going to allow those of us involved in agriculture to continue to use a drone. It's a real victory, if you will, and very, very important, I believe, to agriculture on a go-forward basis. By the same token, going back to my theme of cautiousness, if you look at another industry, that of the energy industry, if you look at the phenomenal development that occurred in the Bakken in the north-central North Dakota, a few years ago, there was 126 drilling rigs running in the Bakken. Today, there are less than 20. That is a dramatic change. And don't think that some of those changes can't materially affect agriculture and farmland values on both a negative as well as a positive perspective. If you look in the Bakken and look at the local Salvation Army store, a year ago they were having 20 visitors per week. Today they're having 20 visitors per day. That is how the economy up there has got essentially turned upside down in a very, very short period of time, if you will. So keep in mind, any market, whether it's farmland, commodity prices, oil, gas, whatever, can in fact change, and it can change in a very short period of time. The other commodity that directly or indirectly involves most of us in this room is ethanol. I want to simply throw out to you something that we all need to consider, and that is going into 2016, to the extent of my knowledge, we do not have one potential candidate that truly supports ethanol on a go-forward basis. This could have some very negative consequences for those of us who are involved in agriculture at one level or another. Again, in summary, I would simply say, you know your cash flow, know what you can handle, know what price you need to sell a little corn, a little beans, a little wheat, whatever the case may be, a little livestock at, to maintain a very viable operation. In summary, I would say to you that I believe long-term farmland continues to have a very bright and very positive outlook, if you will. But so, same token, in the short run here, and as Greg alluded to, if in fact we would have 3.25 cash corn come fall, there'd be some pain out here in rural America, to say the least. So again, it's a time for caution. Same token, as I've redundantly stated, I believe long-term farmland continues to be a very viable place to have some assets, if you will. But I thank you for the opportunity of being with you this morning. And Todd, if we have a little time left, we might field a question or two if there are any. Again, thank you for the opportunity of being with you. Yes. I'm sorry? Cash rents are a real puzzle, and in my opinion have been a real puzzle for 2 years, on the basis that there's a lot of pressure coming primarily from the banking industry. Cash rents, in my opinion, are lower. I think a recent survey of a sector of the American society suggested cash rents were 16% lower. Quite frankly, with the adjustment that we've had in commodity prices, I believe cash rents need to experience more of an adjustment than 16%. Again, going back to Greg's comment, which I don't disagree with, I hope it doesn't occur, but going back to Greg's comment about 3.25 cash corn, if in fact we have 3.25 cash corn, we will have a significant adjustment in cash rents looking into 2016, in my opinion. Good question. Yes, at the back. There, pension money, how much pension money is chasing U.S. agriculture? There's an absolute phenomenal quantity of pension money pursuing U.S. agriculture, something in the magnitude of $5 to $15 billion. By the same token, at the moment, somebody's stolen the keys on them on the basis that they're locked out of the market. Again, the idea of them getting a 2.5, 2.75, even 3% return, when in fact their operating expenses to the greatest extent will be 1 to 1.5%. It just doesn't leave them a net return large enough for them to furnish a reasonable cash flow to the pension community that they're trying to fund on a go-forward basis. So that capital is out here. That capital overhangs the marketplace. But is it, you know, are they buying many farms today? Generally speaking, no. There's a couple exceptions to that, but generally speaking, no. Good question.
USDA in the last couple of months has done a lot of forward-looking. They always do that annually. You in the past have said if you were going to purchase land anywhere on the planet, you would do it in the Midwest. USDA has looked forward and said within a 10-year period that Brazil will be one of our leading agricultural producers. They will be gaining a lot of ground between then and now. Are you still of a mind that the United States and the Midwest is the primary place to invest in farmland?
First of all, Todd, and that's a great question, but first of all, you know, since the early 1980s, I've constantly heard that Brazil or South America was going to take us over and you know, all of us in the Midwest would be out of business sooner or later, when in fact that's not materialized, and I don't believe it'll materialize on a go-forward basis. So again, with that as a backdrop, I still think that Midwestern farmland is an absolute excellent place to be. You compare Midwestern farmland, again, you know, $8,000 to $12,000 an acre for a general range. You look at land in southern Ontario and Canada, it's trading for $16,000 to $22,000 an acre. I have a friend who's a large potato farmer in Germany. His land is trading for $75,000 an acre. And so you compare that back to what's happening in Illinois, Indiana, and quite frankly, you know, a lot of us in this room think it's too high today, which it might or might not be. It's a bargain compared to many other regions of the world. Yes, you know, Brazil and South America continues to overhang us, but by the same token, the Midwest is a great place to be.
We have a couple of other questions here. Yes, sir.
Unfortunately, they only do that survey about once every 3-4 years. So I don't have the current numbers, but so I'm speculating. Great question. But the farmer dominates the marketplace. The farmer is somewhere in the area of 70 to 85%. That's a wide range to give you to your good question. 70 to 85% of the marketplace, when in fact the number I remember is in 2006, the farmer was less than 35% of the marketplace. And again, it's a reflection of, and again, this was touched up by this morning's panel, that the last 3 years has been a very, very profitable period of time to be involved in Midwestern agriculture. And as a result of that, there's a phenomenal amount of cash sitting out here in rural America today that's looking for a home. And as a result of that, the farmer by far dominates. And that goes back to my reason, my hypothesis, if you will, that it depends upon who the neighbor is, how much cash is there within 5 miles of the farm that someone's thinking of selling. And again, that is a tremendous driving force to market value today. Yes, Chuck. The question is, why are pension funds not buying, ultimately, a greater amount of farmland? First of all, there's not the farmland, as I touched on, available today that there was 5 years ago, 7 years ago, 10 years ago. But two, and more importantly, their real problem is a number of years ago they used to have a threshold return of 5%. Then they reduced that return to 4.5%. Then they reduced it to 4%. Then some of them, not all of them, reduced it to 3.5%. Well, at 3.5% today, there's not many farms, that are quality farms, that are trading hands in Illinois and Indiana today that offer a rate of return of 3.5%. And again, when you get down in that 2.5% to 3% return, giving the cost structures I already touched on by the pension community of somewhere in the area of about a 1.5%, generally speaking. So you have a 3% return. Their costs of operation, believe it or not, are about 1.5% in most cases. You have a 1.5% rate of return. And most of the funds, particularly in Illinois, I know the numbers, in Illinois, they have a target return of 7 to 8%, despite the fact that might be not achievable today, like many things in Illinois, that it's simply a rate of return that they cannot get to take care of their pension community on a go-forward basis from a cash flow and ultimate payments. Good question. Yes, sir. Right back here. First of all, great question. What will the ag economy do in the next 3 years, generally speaking? First of all, I don't think that there's going to be a lot of change would be my number one prediction on a go-forward basis. There's some areas where, yes, there will be more land for sale than others. Those communities might receive some pressure, frequently involving extra circumstances, if you will. But at the same time, I don't see a lot of change upward or downward on within the next 3 years. But at the same token, remember my comparison of A ground and A-plus ground to U.S. Treasuries. Now, in one sense, that's kind of a crazy comparison, I'd be the first to admit. But that's the way a lot of investors are looking at it today. I can buy, you know, five-year treasuries and get a 0.7% return, or we can go to Todd's favorite bank and get a return of 0.15. I'm never going to leave that alone, Todd. I'm sorry. But we can get a 0.15% return, or we can keep that farm and, you know, rent it to our cousin and at least get a, you know, 1.5% or 2% return. So I don't think there's going to be a lot. I think the amount of land coming to the marketplace within the next 3 years is going to be minimal. And that ultimately, going back to your good question, might be the driving force that does, in fact, keep land values where they're at currently. Yes, Chuck. Chuck, as you know, I will attempt to talk about almost anything. Interest rates, the Fed raising interest rates, is one subject I'm not touching. I've been predicting that for 7 or 8 years, that the Fed had to raise interest rates. For the sake of the retired person on fixed income, we have to raise interest rates. Yes, there's speculation at the moment based upon them taking that variable word out of their paragraph of description that they're going to raise the rates in June. I'll believe it when it happens. And even if they do raise the rates in June, you know, what's a 16th or an eighth of a point? It's nothing in comparison to the launching pad that we're starting from. And given that, I just don't see. In fact, I read a very, very highly regarded economist last night who said that we would not have any significant interest rate change at the Fed level for at least 2 to 3 more years. Now, in one sense, I hope that's wrong for the sake of the U.S. economy, but it's a jump ball. But again, me predicting interest rates is a very bad subject. One question down here, and I believe our time's about up. It goes back, number one, to commodity prices. Greg's comment, if we have 3.25 corn in the fall, yeah, we'll have some pressure on some farms, and that might be a good time. But the same token, I've said this to Todd before, I never bought a farm that I didn't pay too much money for on that given day. And yet, as I look at my own personal portfolio and look in the rearview mirror, there's not one of them you can have for what I paid for it. And with that stated, if you've got money in the bank and you're looking for a home, and, you know, Todd's banker friend is your banker offering you 0.15%. As you can tell, I'm not leaving that alone.
No.
That, you know, why wouldn't, you know, even if it goes down 5 or 10%,
it's a credit union.
You know, if you find that really good farm and you've got the cash in hand, go buy it, would be my opinion.
One more.
Wait, sir.